As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Manchester United with 13 to go. Garnacho! Garnacho with a penalty, the winner in the Youth Cup final. United 2, Forest 1.
Glory, glory, Man United. Glory, glory, Man United. Glory, glory, Man United. As the Reds go marching up, up, up.
Well, gentlemen, congratulations to the winners of the 2022 FA Youth Cup.
This is Talk of the Devils, the Athletic's podcast dedicated to Manchester United. I'm Ian Irving, and this is the sound inside Old Trafford of Manchester United's youngsters winning the FA Youth Cup. The players are just taking a lap of honour around the stadium. The captain, Rhys Bennett, has just high-fived one of the security guards. Alejandro Garnacho is having his picture taken with an Argentina flag as well. What a night for these young Manchester United stars. It was the captain, Bennett, who sent them on their way, scoring the opening goal early in the first half, and then Nottingham Forest equalising just before half-time. But Garnacho was not to be denied. Two goals from him in the second half, one from the penalty spot and one in stoppage time to seal a famous win for United in front of a record crowd for this competition as well. 67,492 fans packed inside Old Trafford. The biggest crowd in the history of the FA Youth Cup. It is, of course, the last competitive match of the season here at Old Trafford. And after the senior side has failed to live up to all of our expectations this campaign, how fitting that the under-18s will send all United fans home happy for one last time from this stadium this season, with a smile on their face. We'll be joined by Laurie Whitwell and Andy Mitten on the podcast shortly, but first, let's get some reaction from the Manchester United camp.
Does Clifford in dangerously, 1-0! Fabulous header, Manchester United lead, and it's the skipper, Rhys Bennett!
Oh, you can't get better than this. 75,000 at Old Trafford, it's like I say, I've just dreamt of this since I was a little kid. First day I joined this club, I just thought, you know, this is what dreams are made of, isn't it? So, you know, I'm buzzing. None of us could have done it on our own. Every single game, you know, the best thing about it for me, as I said previously, is that we've done it together. Do you know what I mean? We've done it as a team. No one's been individual. You know, we've gone down twice, conceded first, and every single one of them's dug deep, put it until the last minute. I'm just so proud of all of them, and every single one of them deserve it.
Cast one for Sam. Got a bit feisty at the end. You were involved. How was that for you as a finish?
Yeah, we just got a fight till the end, haven't you? You know, these lads, you grow up with them, and we've got each other's backs, you know. I've lived with quite a few of them for a few years, and you know, it means so much. We've got each other, and that's what got us through at the end. You know, we're such a good team together, and got the backing of everyone.
Well,
This is actually the second time that we've recorded the main section of the podcast, because this is my confession that it was my responsibility to record us last night when we were gathered outside Old Trafford between a programme stall and a burger van at midnight in the dark and cold of Manchester with a drink in hand, revelling in what was an absolutely brilliant atmosphere with input from families of the Manchester United players. And yeah, it's not worked. And now here we are on... I'm so annoyed still. I hope you can hear this in my voice. But anyway, let's get on with it. I need to introduce you again for the second time in just 12 hours. Andy Mitten and Laurie Whitwell. Gentlemen, I'm so sorry.
I'm just sad for the people that missed out, because we got the big Sir Alex Ferguson excuse, yeah, didn't we? He came over and said hello. We had a nice chat with him as he was leaving the stadium.
Ridiculous.
We'll never hear that. I feel like it's going to be... You know when black and white games from yesteryear, you know, 1968 European Cup final, has been brought back to Technicolor. I want this recording kept in future years. Maybe there's some technology that can bring it back to life and can show the people how good it was. Because it's fantastic, wasn't it? We had Andy, yeah, chatting to Mark Girardot's family.
In his Karl Lagerfeld jacket, yeah, I remember it well.
We had Rhys Bennett's grandma, I think it was, telling me, I know he's a nice lad, when I went over to her and said, we've just spoken to him, he's a lovely lad. And they're wearing masks with his face on, which he found absolutely hilarious. And the best bit was probably, I don't know what you think, Andy, was the CUs that were going on at like 2 hours after full time in the game. We still had like a few dozen fans still milling around, weren't there? Some middle-aged doing the Cristiano Ronaldo CU celebration as Alejandro Garnacho was in the executive box looking out from the Munich tunnel, the suites above the Munich tunnel. What do you think, Andy? What else can we grill Ian on about this disaster of a technical fault?
Firstly, I don't think we should accept his apology. I think he should follow Rebecca Vardy and Colleen Rooney into court and be cross-examined as to what went on.
Did you drop it in the North Sea, Ian? Is that what happened?
Yeah. We finished the podcast at midnight. I had my mum on my case.
You did as well, yeah. I need to apologise to her. What's your mum called, Andy?
Anne,
I'm so sorry that I kept Andy out so late for absolutely no reason in the end.
I had an early flight as well, but this is no consolation. I thought the podcast was really good. We were having a laugh together. We were drinking together. We had the players' families coming up. We had freight trains going past on the Liverpool to Manchester rail line. And Laurie had his little train spotters book and he went, I've had that one. I caught that one at Wilmslow Station. I've seen that one at Lime Street on my 17th birthday. And the players were in view. Everyone was buzzing because United had won the FA Youth Cup. You're right, I was talking to Mark Girardot's family. Do you really want to know what I spoke to him about? So they're from Sabadell, just outside Barcelona. But it's known among very old people there as the Catalan Manchester because of links with the textile industry. And I learned that when I got sent there 10 years ago before the Barcelona-Manchester United game to write about sort of big Catalan cities. And Mark Girardot's mother went, come here, and got his grandparents to come over. And one of them, yeah, it's true. And then the player came over and he didn't have a clue about it. So... They're probably thinking, who was that proper oddball who came up to us whilst...
But I like his jacket.
Yeah, I liked some jacket. Where'd you get your jacket from, mate? That's really cool. And
it was good, though, how Girardot's grandma was infused talking to you, Andy, about Cottonopolis and all that sort of stuff. And obviously, you had a grandma grilling you as well, Laurie, didn't you? Which seemed like quite nice poetry for us, to be fair, that you both had that. None of this is making me feel any better about the fact that this recording's not worked, to be honest.
I'm going
to
make you feel a little bit better, Ian, because I'm still grateful, listeners, for Ian bringing to us last night his little bag of tricks, which included a cool bag with a little drink for each of us that symbolised our personalities, I feel like. So he didn't tell us in advance that he was doing this, and he reached down and said, listen, lads, have a look in there. And it was just the perfect accompaniment to an enjoyable evening, wasn't it? And a sort of a nice way to end the season after a difficult few months.
Yeah. Well, basically, we'd said that we would always do a podcast together in person before the end of the season. We hoped that it was going to be for a final for Manchester United's first team. So why not do it for the U team? Andy had a can of Estrella, which he tells me is the working man's beer of Barcelona. So a man of simple taste gets a simple beer. That seemed perfect. And of course, Laurie got a knockoff.
You can't be giving it out today, mate. You've got to be humble in this podcast. And yeah, I did say that. And I also said, in Britain, it's marketed as like a premium beer. So that just shows the power of marketing. And you also said, well, why are you talking to Mark Girardot's family? And one serious point I made was, when foreign players move to the city where I'm from, I like them to feel welcomed. I like them to feel a connection and to feel happy. And he actually spoke very good English, but it should be more than the football. And I obviously they're happy last night because they won, but most of them lads who played in that game, they're not going to make it at Manchester United. Let's be realistic. And I like their experience of living in Manchester to be as positive as possible. But again, you might think a stranger coming up to him and talking to him about, you know, the history of the town that they're from.
Maybe slightly creepy, I don't know. But you're right, I probably shouldn't give it out anymore today, considering. I was about to take the mick out of Laurie for his...
I'll have it, I need to make you feel better, because when you rang me, I just dropped Andy off at his mum's house. She obviously called him late on, didn't she? She said, where's Andy? And I love how he thinks that he's an old person. He's not an old person, is he? Still got his mum calling him up, saying, where are you? Give us three rings when you're safe. So I dropped him off and you called me up and said, Laurie. And I'm like, why is he so deflated? You know, the recording's not worked. And we had like a little moment, didn't we? But so I don't mind. Listen, you come on, give it to me in here. Come on.
Well, I was about to say, I'd talked about why I bought Andy the can of Estrella, and I bought you a can of, it was called Italian Spritz. It wasn't an Aperol Spritz. It was a knockoff sort of ideas of grandeur type cocktail in a can thing, which I thought was perfect for you and your personality as well. So there we go. I've done it now, haven't I?
You nailed it, Ian. I enjoyed it very much. And it's a nice segue, the drinks, into my little quiz that I did on Instagram that a few people replied to, you being one of them. I was at a wedding in Spain at the weekend rather than watching events on the South Coast. I mean, I don't know if that game got cancelled or what happened to it. Yeah, what exactly. Game? Let's move on. I was at a nice wedding, had a lovely time, and I had a little drink in my hand, and I put a picture on social media and said, what am I drinking then? You went for Benny and Hot, didn't you?
Had to be, didn't it, really?
I had a few saying Fanta and Coke, thank you for listening. A few saying Di Serrano. It was actually a vermouth, which apparently is a drink that they have over there, which is kind of red wine fortified, sweet anyway. So you were right with Miss Brits. Anything sweet, I go for. So I said I'd give a shout out to anyone that got it right. No one quite got it right, but Amir Singh, 91, said Martini Rosso, which is very similar. So I'll give you the credit.
Yeah, okay. What was his name,
sorry? Amar Singh, 91.
Well done. You've won the quiz. I think we need to talk about the game as well,
get
don't we?
That, yeah.
That was one thing we did talk quite a lot about last night. I thought it was just a brilliant old school Manchester United night, Andy. A real uplifting night, actually, after what's been not a very uplifting season.
Crowd was amazing. 67,000, 6,000 Forest. Great to see Forest back at Old Trafford. It's been too long. Got a lot of respect for that club. Won the two European Cups. Managed by Warren Joyce, formerly of Manchester United. Big aggressive side, ultra up for it, fit. I think Manchester United had technically superior players, but it was by no means a given at all. United went ahead, pretty bad mistake to lead to the equaliser. Another mistake, this time from an official, which led to Manchester United's second via a penalty, because there was a foul, but it was clearly outside the box, but there's no VAR at that level. And then Garnacho is probably the player we'll speak about more than most. He finished the game really, really strongly. Other notable appearances throughout the team. But just to see the lads like urging Old Trafford to raise the game and like forgetting as they're doing it that there's a game going on that they're actually playing him. It just made me laugh because it was a real innocence. And I wouldn't say they got carried away with the occasion, but I think they were allowed to really enjoy it, and the way that they celebrated, and the Stretford end, the Red Army section had a big flag for the young players. It was a really great night. I enjoyed it thoroughly before, during, and after. I stood on some at Busby Way, and it was just great to see so many people smiling. And there are many people who will claim success for this. And 7 years ago, I wrote a very critical article about Manchester United's youth system, so it's come full circle since then. Some of those have departed, like Nicky Butt. Nick Cox is still there. He's been very important. Lots of the coaches have all chipped in, and the players themselves. And it's great that United have won the Youth Cup for the first time in 11 years. It's a record 12th FA Youth Cup. Chelsea were getting a bit too close for comfort. They've won it 10 times, I think. But that crowd, if you look at the crowd of the previous FA Youth Cup finals, the last one before COVID, just short of 4,000 between Manchester City and Liverpool. And that's not an unusual crowd. The bigger clubs tend to have far bigger crowds. I'm not saying that Manchester City and Liverpool are small clubs here, by the way, but 67,000 just blew everything out the water.
You had a great start though, Andy, as well last night, didn't you? You say it was the biggest crowd that a Nottingham Forest team had played in front of since when?
Since the League Cup final in 1992 against Manchester United.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, because Old Trafford, when Forest last played there, not gone above 60,000 because it was still being redeveloped. Back to the days when Old Trafford was redeveloped, a little dig there. And Forest have been in the Championship and down to the third level, I think, at one point. So, yeah, it's a mad statistic. But
yeah, another stat that we're going to repeat as well is the idea that a player from each of the FA Youth Cup winning teams has gone on to make more than 50 appearances, or at least 50 appearances, for the first team. That was a stat that was one of the journalists had that last night, Laurie, I think. I've seen Rob Dawson tweeting it. Was it Samuel Lucas, I think you said, had the tweet as well. Had the stat, sorry, last night. But from that team then, Laurie, last night, who is the one that impressed you the most, if it's fair to pick out just one?
Yeah, it's always difficult, isn't it? And fair to Nick Cox, after the game, we were on pitch side, weren't we? It was great being pitch side, sort of seeing all the interaction between the families. And he made the point that, listen, it's not a linear kind of journey. You know, you might get someone who's on the bench who actually, you know, makes his debut first or has a long-standing association. Equally, it's hard to overlook the guy that's been starring throughout this competition, Alejandro Garnacho, who's already made his debut, perhaps ahead of time, you know, perhaps in a situation where you've got somebody given a chance because the situation with the first team isn't great, and it's nice to give him a little taste of first team action before the season ends. But I think he just looks like somebody who is ready for this. I mean, that was one of the things that you had. 67,452, I think it was. Incredible crowd.
92.
Sorry, I've done 40 people out of it there. And but he absolutely embraced it, didn't he? You know, the celebration, the Cristiano Ronaldo one, and then taking his shirt off. He wasn't cowed by the experience. And that's, I think it's a real gauge of whether a player can be a professional footballer. Is, I mean, nobody, no 17-year-old usually plays in front of that bigger crowd. Go and see what you're made of, and he kind of played till the end. He's got that speed endurance, hasn't he? He's got that little bit of X factor. As long as he keeps the balance right between, you know, knowing you've got that confidence to go and do it and not becoming arrogant with it and picking the passes at the right time when he needs to, I think he's got a really good chance.
Yeah, sometimes with young players, you just get a sense that there's more to come from them. And being up close to Garnacho last night and looking at the way he behaved in that environment, the way he embraced the idea of playing in front of 76,000 fans. By no means was he the only player to do this, but he looked like he was really enjoying the occasion and being on the pitch at the end with an Argentina flag tied around his neck, hearing the chant Viva Garnacho from the Stretford end and throwing his hands in the air to say louder, louder, louder. Argentina was coming out. He just looked like he was having the time of his life, and you could see that very naturally how he'd continue with that. He wasn't the only one, though, Andy, was he, who stood out last night? Laurie's written about five different players who caught the eye. That piece on The Athletic Now, he finished that after recording that late-night podcast that will forever be forgotten now. That's up on The Athletic at the minute. Go and have a look at that. Who else stood out to you, Andy?
Well, I will read Laurie's piece. I've not read it yet because I got to bed really, really late because I was doing a podcast. I thought Reece Bennett, the captain, had a great game. I hope Laurie's mentioned him. He was a threat in the air. At set pieces. Lewis Jackson, 16 years old, came in as a replacement, played on the left side of central defence. He was good. Some of the more higher profile players, Isaac Hansom, he'd not been as busy in previous games that I've seen anyway, but he picked the ball up in nice spots and he linked the play well. I think Charlie McNeil, he worked really hard. It didn't quite come off for him. Max Oyedele made a difference when he came on. So they were some of the names who I took notice of, and I'd be delighted if two of them made it as first-team players. Bit sorry for Anthony Elanga that he sort of misses out on a trophy because he's been so good and come up through the system. Just encouraging that they've got through, they've won the competition, and that lifts everybody around Carrington. The 16-year-olds now will look at them and think, we hope to emulate that. And hopefully you get this virtuous circle where competition is thriving. And that always happened with the great Manchester United youth teams of old. I'd like to see Erik ten Hag's view on some of them, whether he takes some of them on the pre-season tour to Thailand, to Australia, but they've all done themselves massive, massive favours by winning that competition.
Yeah, we should say congratulations to Erik ten Hag at this point as well, of course. They were confirmed as champions of the Eredivisie Ajax last night with a 5-0 victory over Heerenveen. While we were at Old Trafford, Andy was getting messages from a friend over in Amsterdam of some of the scenes over there as well. It looked absolutely brilliant. So it's good that he's ending there on a high to bring that boost and confidence to Old Trafford, because he's got a lot of work to do to repeat those scenes in Manchester, certainly. One part of all of that last night that I really enjoyed, Laurie, was listening to Sam Murray talk about the fact that he's stood with the Red Army this season in Old Trafford, supporting the first team. He's travelled to away games as well to do exactly the same. Sam Mather is another one who's done the same. You've written about it in your piece too. To hear him say that he's done that this year, even this week, I think, and now he's on the pitch being supported by that same section, felt like a really special moment for the club to have a young lad who supports the team on the pitch, playing for the team and winning a trophy in front of a section that he's stood in this season. Just is what it's all about, in a sense, isn't it?
Pretty surreal, really. I mean, I think it's great that you can have those stories in football, and the fact that hopefully that means that if he is to make it, he's got that understanding. I mean, he said that after the game, you know, I know what it's like to stand on the terraces. So you kind of feel like football's about connections and having an emotional attachment with what you're watching, and hopefully that would strengthen that bond. There's actually another lad, Finn McAllister, who's in United's under-16s. Apparently he goes home and away as well. Looks like a Brandon Williams lookalike, who's another one that, you know, understands what it is to be a Manchester United fan. So I think that is a sweet moment, and I think they all did. I mean, Sam Murray in particular, he enjoyed the feistiness of the way the match ended.
There was a bit of edge at the end, wasn't there?
Bit of kickoff, yeah, after that second kickoff. And Dan Gore got stuck in. He's a little one in midfield who reminds me a little bit of Paul Scholes, you know, the way he kind of gets on the ball. I'm not sort of giving him too much hype there, hopefully, but he also can put it about, and he sort of seemed to enjoy the kind of rivalry. And the players seemed to feed off the atmosphere rather than, like I say, be, I guess, a bit nerved by it. I mean, Cobbie Mainoo is another one that I would just throw into the mix. I think he's always looked quite assured in midfield for United from Stockport. Seems to be really good at manipulating the ball, so he's another one that I think I picked out. But yeah, in general, I just sort of felt it was a really pleasing performance, and it's only one step, isn't it? It's the FA Youth Cup. It's, you know, it can't be the end of the journey. It can't be something that United celebrate until the end of time, and, you know, remember that time we won the 22 FA Youth Cup. It needs to be a platform for, you know, first team development. But as a particular night, especially at the end of this season, I think it was one to be savoured.
Right, Andy, I'm going to let you go because you need to go and pick your children up from school, and I also don't want to now be responsible for your children being stood at the school gates and not being picked up when I've kept your mum up late. So I'm going to let you go, but thank you very much for doing this for the second time.
Thanks, everybody.
Cheers, Andy.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the team's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham, all new, Thursdays on FX, stream on Hulu. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. you can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Okay, Laurie's still with us. We're going to round up some of the news that's happened, because quite a lot's happened actually since we recorded last night. So there was a purpose to redoing this after all. I'm holding on to any shred of comfort I can take at this moment. Ajax have announced a replacement for Erik ten Hag since we've recorded last night. Alfred Schreuder is the choice for them. It was previously Ten Hag's assistant, Laurie, is that right? Anthony Hayes written about it on The Athletic, if you want to go and read about it.
Yeah, it's an interesting appointment for Ajax. It was under him whilst they were having that run to the semi-finals of the Champions League. And by all accounts, an integral person in that. He went off and did his own thing as a manager, Club Bruges. So it's interesting that Ajax have brought him back. You know, they obviously value him highly. It looks a bit like Erik ten Hag, doesn't he? And he looks a bit like Mitchell van der Gaag, who we're expecting to come in. So I'm sort of...
Same barbers.
Yeah. Interesting that they've acted so quickly, but it was nice seeing Edwin van der Sar give Erik ten Hag a nice send-off on the pitch, although he did sort of say you were a bit weird at times, didn't he? But then you made it through. It's kind of a slightly odd compliment. So listen,
very van der Sar from my memories of interviewing him,
right, okay,
when he was
go.
At Manchester United. Quite dry and slightly sort of... condescending is probably a strong way of putting it, but I think I know what I'm getting at.
Well, listen, if he's slightly weird with us, then you know, I'll have that. You know, bit of weirdness is never a bad thing. And I guess our first chance to see him will be on this pre-season tour in Thailand and Australia, which I'm going to. So get yourself down there. Nice, smooth trip across the other side of the world. But I think they will now start to move properly with Erik ten Hag, you know, in terms of meetings for what he wants to do with the signings, in terms of all kinds of, you know, pre-season plans. I think now that he's won the title, he can box that off. That was his whole focus. I think they can really start to actually get some movement going.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they've got their season finale at the weekend. Obviously, everything's sorted now, isn't it? Just one game left. So I guess he can now truly switch his focus on to Manchester United. Already the speculation starting as well. And there's going to be so many Ajax links this summer, isn't there? There's going to be so many. We're already doing it now, aren't we, to be fair? Frenkie de Jong is a name that's been linked with Manchester United already. There's a big piece on Barcelona's dilemma on The Athletic. Again, something else which has happened since we recorded last night, from Dermot Corrigan. Are United interested, Laurie? What do you think of him as a choice? Obviously, he was at Ajax under Ten Hag when they had that brilliant run to the semi-final of the Champions League in 2019, and it's not worked out perfectly for him at the Nou Camp, has it?
Yeah, it seems like an interesting set of versions of what's happened in Barcelona, and Dermot Corrigan's done a really good piece, as you mentioned, just sort of having a look at that. Do Barcelona want to sell him? Do Barcelona need to sell him? Is Xavi's view of this an integral part? I think what we can say with certainty is that United are interested. I think he's been on their sort of radar for a while, even before Erik ten Hag. But Erik ten Hag is somebody that really rates Frenkie de Jong and would have him at Manchester United. And clearly central midfield is somewhere that United need to strengthen. And it might even be the priority for Erik ten Hag over a centre-forward striker, which we know we've discussed in terms of talks over Darwin Nunes, for example, and perhaps others. I would keep an eye on it. It's a debatable one. There's sort of conflicting reports over whether he, the player himself, is interested. I was speaking to Dermot about this, and he was saying that there's an idea that, you know, he's not necessarily enamoured with coming to a team without Champions League football, which I suppose you can sort of expect. But then again, if United are offering him an opportunity to play regularly under a manager that he knows well, a stadium that is, you know, huge, and okay, the Nou Camp's kind of big as well, but you know, the lure of Manchester United is still sort of there for a lot of players. I think that it's one to watch, I would say.
Yeah, and he details in the piece, Dermot, as well, about the financial struggles, the ongoing financial struggles of Barcelona, which I guess could well be a consideration for them this summer, and maybe something that Manchester United can take advantage of, possibly. The speculation won't stop there. There'll be plenty more names, which of course we'll talk about as time passes on Talk of the Devils. But one other thing we need to mention before we go, Laurie, are the changes at the club, which are only continuing. We understand there's more on the way, but for the minute, you've reported about Hang on a minute, I need to get this right because not everyone does, apparently. Chief Strategy Officer of Manchester United has departed, Laurie. What are you laughing at?
Are you having another pop at me on a podcast that we've had to re-record because of your technical dilemmas? Right.
I've had to come out swinging today, haven't I?
I like it. You're on the ropes and you've landed a few haymakers. You're absolutely spot on because I said he was the head of corporate finance at Manchester United, which is what his LinkedIn still says, but I was reliably told after I tweeted it that he's actually the chief strategy officer.
It's not as reliable as Wikipedia, is it, LinkedIn, clearly?
Exactly. I should have second sourced it. But I think the idea is that he was doing similar kind of jobs. I don't know what exactly the job titles changing definitively means. But I think he got this new role after Richard Arnold was made chief executive. But it is an interesting thing that he's left. I mean, I know a lot of people will be like, who is that? I've got a few memes in reply to my tweet, you know, the Conor McGregor, who the is that guy? But actually, he's a really important person behind the scenes in that he was very closely aligned with Ed Woodward, worked in the Mayfair offices, in fact, next to Ed Woodward with Matt Judge. So, I mean, there's some office space going spare at the Green Park.
There's an office going spare at this rate, isn't there?
Yeah. It's a nice office as well. I've been there. It's, you know, sort of gold, label on the gold plaque on the door, and then you go up the lift and it's kind of like all dressed out, you know, in kind of like oak panels, a bit like Old Trafford, actually. I think that's what they kind of tried to sell it as. So when people come, it's where they do the commercial deals, really, and they do quite a lot of football talks, actually. And that's something to be debated, really. You know, should they be doing those kind of things in London? Should they be really doing them in Old Trafford at Carrington, you know, showing them the places firsthand? That's actually something that Richard Arnold is going to be doing. You know, he's based in Old Trafford, John Murta based at Carrington. So, you know, you've got a bit more of a power swing to Manchester, which I think is the right thing. But that being said, Hemen Tesheo was highly regarded, nice guy, important in United's links with the European Club Association on broadcast rights. So it's another sort of gap for them to fill. I mean, again, it might not be that fans look at this and think, that's a good thing, you know, change is happening, change needs to happen, but still it's a role that then needs somebody to fill, and they will be looking for a new chief strategy officer. So it's change, and I think he decided to step away because of Ed Woodward going, you know, felt like it was a natural point at which to leave the club after 10 years. At the same time, did he want to become chief executive? I think that's probably a question, you know, that he could answer, but there's some suggestion that perhaps that was a job that he wanted to do, and maybe, you know, not getting it is therefore a reason to go and think, actually, I'd rather get some, you know, enhanced executive responsibilities elsewhere. So I'm sure we'll see him pop up in the world of football finance as time goes on. But yeah, as you say, this change is happening, and we expect more to come as well.
Okay, if you want to read about the latest changes at Old Trafford, of course, go and have a look at Laurie's piece on The Athletic right now. And remember, you can subscribe to The Athletic for just £1 a month for the first 6 months. Just go to theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod. You get full access to all our great writing and ad-free versions of all The Athletic's podcasts, including this one. That's theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod. Sign up now. Well, Laurie, it was good to do this a second time around, wasn't it? Always better the second time, said no one ever. Thank you all, you at home, for listening as always. We'll be back on Talk of the Devils at the start of next week to preview United's last match of the season against Crystal Palace, and also round up, of course, all the news at Manchester United, which at the minute you just can't take your eyes off. The last 12 hours has shown us that, if nothing else. But thank you for your company as always. Cheers to Laurie and Andy, and we'll see you on the next one. Bye-bye.
The Athletic.